Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Well, things are getting very interesting in the South. It looks like Jeffy, the little elf on the shelf, Jeff Sessions, has decided he is going to run for his old seat. And there are a lot of folks who are saying, well, this is going to be Donald Trump spending a lot of time in Alabama, picking at Jeff Sessions. And look, that can only be a good thing for the rest of the country. While Trump is down focused on beating on his favorite little chew toy, maybe the rest of the country can get a reprieve from the marmalade menace. So a good thing there. Evidently, Trump is going to the University of Alabama LSU game on Saturday in Alabama. So that ought to be fun as well. Anyway, you're here to give us some thoughts on last night's big victories across the country. Also, the insanity we see coming out of this this latest bit of impeachment. And, by the way, the GOP that is now going from the party of Reagan and I don't recall to the party of Trump. And I now recall, yes, as Gordon Sondland has evidently reversed his testimony. Our good friend Sarah Kendzior, author, scholar, and co-host of Gaslit Nation, the best podcast in the country. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So they've gone from the party of I don't recall to evidently now they recall.
Yeah, they recall. They don't care. They update their statements and they're not punished for it. Like, I know I've said this 10 billion times, but these are people who don't care about getting caught. They care about being punished. They care about being restrained. They care about losing their money. They care about actually not being able to continue to carry out these crimes, which are so beneficial to them and them only, and so horrible for the rest of the country. So it's not unexpected that they're, you know, flagrant in their violations, but the Democrats need to step it up. I hope they will at the hearings next week. In terms of, you know, Reagan-era phrases, I kept thinking about trust but verify, and I'm very much at, like, distrust and verify. Like, verify that your distrust is indeed merited. Like, that's what I feel like I've been living for the last, I don't know, I mean, probably a couple decades, but really, like, since Trump was in power, it's just a baseline assumption that they're going to live up to my worst expectations at every turn.
Yeah, all politicians lie, but this one does it so much more.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not just about the information in the lie. It's about the act of lying itself. It's about lying as a form of power. It's about saying, yes, of course, I'm going to lie. I'm going to lie under oath. I'm going to lie in court. What are you going to do about it? I mean, you mentioned Sessions when you were, you know, introducing this segment. Sessions committed perjury. Sessions was implicated in the Russia probe to the extent that he had to recuse himself. And he not only was never investigated and never punished, he feels emboldened enough to run for office again. He's so confident that no one will ever hold him accountable for any of that because no one even tried, not Mueller, not the Democrats, like nobody. And the same is true with George Papadopoulos, who, you know, was indicted by Mueller, who made this fake plea bargain agreement, got like, you know, 2 weeks in prison, and is now running for Katie Hill's seat and may have had a hand in the revenge porn operation that brought her out of office. And they will keep doing this. They will keep committing these horrendous crimes and offenses unless they are actually held accountable. And the way to do that is by attacking financial interests, by, you know, fining them if they're in, you know, part of the impeachment process, by jailing them if they don't show up for subpoenas, and by actually, you know, going through the arrests and indictments and all the things you would do to any normal person off the street if they were committing the same crimes. Like, yeah. If this were me and you, we'd have been in jail, like, back in, I don't know, like, 1985 or something, but, you know, like, 2017, there's no way in hell that this would have flown for people like you and me.
No, they'd probably send us to Guantanamo or some black site by now.
Yeah, I'd be like beheaded. I mean, it's just, you know, the stuff they get away with, like the extent of it, like the multiplicity of the crimes. Like with Trump's crimes, you have to divide them by category. You have to go into, like, you know, shakedown schemes, sex crimes, perjury, or not perjury because he doesn't go under oath, but, you know, lying to the FBI, treason, conspiracy against the United States. Like, you have to divide them up, you know, and then all the financial crimes, that's its own category. Like, most people don't get to commit that many crimes, like, in their lifetime. Like, that's sort of, you know, I don't know if he's really a record holder in American history, but I think it's possible because of the amount of private citizen crimes compounded with the amount of federal crimes, like a whole different, you know, legal playbook there. Like, it's really rare that somebody gets to do that. Like, and this is a historical moment for us all. But that's why they need to indict him. And that's why it's so bizarre to me that people waffle on this at all. Like, ooh, what did he do? That's an impeachable offense. Like, I don't know, treason? I mean, just, you know, do we forget that one? Like, which he confesses to all the time? It is so weird. It is just so weird that he's sitting there. I mean, every now and again, I have these moments, you know, where I'm like, there's a Kremlin asset backed up by the mafia, like, sitting in the Oval Office, and you're all just going through the motions of your day. Like, this isn't going to end well. No, anyway.
I look at Trump, and my grandfather always said there are some people who would lie when the truth would be better. This is the guy we've got in the White House.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he lies, it's bad. If he tells the truth, it's bad. There's literally no redeeming quality to him. Like, he's, you know, he's the worst American of my lifetime. And, you know, I feel bad sometimes because I've told my children this, you know, which is the thing you want to, like, tell about your president, you know, that he has no redeeming qualities, which is very evident to them. I mean, they're enough to, you know, sort of grasp that on their own. But I'm not even saying it to be flip or to even try to put him down. I just think it's a fact. Like, I literally can't think of anything good, anything he's brought to this country that's beneficial to the public, any showing of kindness or, you know, I don't know. I mean, he's very talented at being bad, but that's not really, you know, an attribute I'd want to encourage in anyone.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, I look at the report today that came out that evidently he's bringing on former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi and former Treasury spokesman Tony Segg. And I look at Bondi, which, you know, you go, explain to me how you bring her on with all of her baggage, you know, like the $25,000 that she got from the Trump people to stop investigating Trump University that nobody ever bothered to really investigate.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things where even the people that surround him are guilty of something.
Oh, absolutely. Well, he likes people like that because they're easier to control. You know, when he is aware of their prior crimes, when he holds all their dirt, when he could potentially blackmail them, sink them, you know, then they are people that he can manipulate, and he also knows they don't have some baseline set of values that's going to lead them to go to the FBI or to any kind of organization that might encourage accountability. You know, what's interesting is, like, you know, you see these people come and go back in the fold. That's been true of him his whole life. That's what happened with Manafort, with Stone, you know, with others involved in the 2016 campaign. But what normally happens at this point is that the circle around a dictator, you know, which is what he wants to be, becomes smaller and smaller. It doesn't expand. I mean, I think that's why we saw so much of Giuliani for a while, because he was Trump's sidekick in New York for so many decades. So it's like this, you know, familiar face engaged in, you know, similar criminal pursuits. And so for Pam Bondi to re-enter the equation, it's not entirely unexpected. But, I mean, at some point, you know, he's just going to, I mean, I keep thinking he's going to run out of people, like run out of scumbags, you know, like there's some sort of limited amount. But what I'm learning about this country is that, you know, there are many more, like, just horrific people that I knew. It's like the model of The Apprentice, honestly. It's the same model as, like, Celebrity Apprentice, where you find these D-listers who are just, you know, everyone's forgotten about them, whether it's, like, Jeff Sessions or Ben Botany or, you know, Oliver North. You're just like, oh, God, that guy, oh, my God, I can't believe they're back, and you're rehabilitating them, and, oh, now I have to think about them again. Like, that's how he runs the whole administration. And just like reality TV, you don't run out. You don't run out of those D-listers. Like, that's the American gift.
Yeah, aren't they dead yet?
I keep wondering about that. Every now and again, I look up the people who I think are kind of at the heart of this whole international criminal political operation, people like Henry Kissinger. I'm just like, what kind of world is this where he is like 96 and, you know, we lost all those great singers and actors and stuff in 2016. There's like a celebrity rapture. But I live in a world where like Henry Kissinger gets to be 96 and advises President Donald Trump the Kremlin asset. Like, that's my reality. Like, what a time to be alive, briefly. I mean, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, well, like they say, may you live in interesting times. I'm not even going to say these are interesting. They're kind of bad. But yesterday gives me a little bit of hope. I mean, to me, the best race in the country was the woman who got fired for giving the Trump motorcade the finger. She actually won an election yesterday.
Oh, yeah, I love that. I love that. I like showing my kid that because she was reading about it on her own. And she was, like, psyched. Julie Brisman, that's that woman who, you know, that she follows me on Twitter. So I'm followed by someone cool. But, yeah, you know, I'm glad she won. I'm glad that people are continuing to boo and protest Trump. I'm glad these other Democrats won in their races. The Virginia situation is interesting. The Kentucky situation, I do think, is a little overstated because it's not like Kentucky hasn't had all these Democratic governors. I mean, they generally, it's not as red as people think, and there's a whole sort of, you know, internal structure to their politics that people need to examine. But it's still good. You know, they were winning in counties that had gone overwhelmingly for Trump. So it was definitely a rejection of Trump, you know, because Trump was there trying to get all those voters. And I think that they were very turned off by what they saw. So that was good. We had a flip in Missouri as well. You know, an area that was once, you know, run by the head of the Missouri GOP has now gone Democratic in the St. Louis suburbs. So that was kind of a fun twist on things.
So it's a good direction. You know, things are going in the right direction for 2020 because I still don't think that he's going to be removed from office. I believe he'll be impeached, just not removed. But, you know, he was in Kentucky, and I'm sure you saw all the people standing behind him with the Read the Transcript T-shirts on, which evidently Lindsey Graham is going to refuse to read the transcript. And Jim Jordan has said he doesn't really need them. He's already read them, and he believes Trump. He takes Trump at his word.
I mean, they're in a cult. Like, all these guys have really reached a point where they're not, like, transitioning to a personality cult, an authoritarian cult kind of operation. You know, they are openly in it. And so no words matter. Transcripts don't matter. Documents don't matter. The words of the law don't matter. All that matters is the word of the leader. The leader defines reality. The leader defines the truth. That is how they're behaving. And they're going to say, you know, over the course of the next few weeks as we move into impeachment hearings, a lot of things that are going to sound absolutely insane and illogical, and they're going to freak out the press. Like, I can almost guarantee you that just as they've been complaining that all of these, you know, interviews have been private and withheld from the public, they're now going to probably flip that and say, oh my God, this is out in the open in an imbalanced way, and we need to keep this private, and you violated national security by telling us. It's like they're just going to keep flipping the script, keep inventing, you know, whatever bizarre narrative, you know, Trump's team comes up with, you know, not necessarily Trump himself, but the propagandists behind him. I hope the press doesn't take the bait. I hope they, you know, look at the broader picture here, which is criminal impunity. It's a lack of accountability, and it's a profound threat to our national security, what's happening. And a lot of that seems to get lost in the, like, minutiae of politics. And in viewing this as a partisan dispute, and of course there's a partisan dispute kind of lying on top of it, but at the heart of it, all of America is threatened. You know, our institutions have been destroyed, the ones that are tasked to protect us. That affects everybody. Right. Like, it doesn't matter who you voted for. Like, you're all in trouble.
No, I mean, at this point, you know, the one person that's come forth to testify or under deposition is Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. I look at his testimony, and his makes to me the most sense. His concerns to me make the most sense in saying, look, we don't want to make Ukraine a political football to where, you know, now it becomes a political issue and they don't get the aid that they need because that's going to be a win for Russia. He also said, look, he was concerned and reported it twice. And he's the guy who said, look, these transcripts that everyone in the T-shirts are wanting you to read. You know, that first transcript of the phone call, that's not it. There's stuff missing from there, which then leads me to believe, where's the cover up? Who covered it up? Why'd they cover it up? And what was actually there that isn't?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not just about a transcript, and it's not just about a whistleblower. It's about the broader spectrum of the situation and extortion and threats and bribery and withholding aid from an ally to appease a hostile state. I mean, that's it. Like, that's bad enough in and of itself. And then you could add to that, you know, the layers of Trump and his lackeys, longstanding ties to transnational crime syndicates that are backed up by the Kremlin, which underlie why they were doing that, like what the motive was for them to intervene in Ukraine in this way. But yeah, I definitely like Alexander Vindman's statement the best because it's simple, it's to the point, it didn't have a lot of legalese, didn't have a lot of Latin jargon. I mean, thankfully, finally, a lot of these politicians and pundits are dropping that. I feel like they talk that way to try to sound smart, like, look how smart I am, look how much law I know. It doesn't do anything for, like, the average person who is already just, like, you know, struggling to figure out, like, what the hell are we doing in Ukraine? Why do I have to learn more about Ukraine now, you know? And so, you know, he did a good job. Like, people should kind of look at that statement he put out and emulate it, I think. It's going to be interesting to see the live testimony. You know, I hope that they, I don't want to say I put on a show in the sense of it being, you know, fraudulent or a lie. You know, I want everyone to be completely honest, but I hope they realize, the Democrats and the House and everyone else who is, you know, actually wants justice here, you know, the value in having a spectacle that offsets the kind of spectacle that Trump controls, you know, right. Things like his rallies, you know, and all these other appearances, like, this is within their control. So they should make it as compelling and easy to understand to the American public as they can. Like, it's a great opportunity to just educate the public about what's going on and let them make up their own minds. So I hope they understand, you know, some of the better ways to do that.
Yeah, I mean, because it seems simple to me. I mean, the obvious, you know, quid pro quo, this for that, do this or we're not giving you aid, I think it's pretty simple to understand. But I think I've had a lot of people ask me, well, why is Ukraine in all of this? Why do we care about Ukraine? Well, you know, what, you know, why is this, you know, going back to the Obama years, you know, why are they central in all this? And I argue, look, this is, to me, the first place Russia wants to take over to get the old gang back together. That's why it's an important issue. In my view, I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. You know, the Kremlin has had eyes on Ukraine for the entirety of its history. It's always viewed it as Russian territory, as like Kievan Rus. And you've seen this divide in Ukraine since the collapse of the Soviet Union, you know, between the Western Ukrainian speaking half and the Russian, you know, ethnically Russian speaking half. It's always been in kind of a tenuous place, you know, in regards to things like joining NATO, joining the EU. But it was moving in this westward direction. You certainly see a very strong pro-democracy movement, you know, that has emerged there over the past, you know, 20 to 25 years. And honestly, before that, during the Soviet period, you saw that same movement. And, you know, Russia seeks to destroy it and take their territory. They've already taken their territory in Crimea. And Ukraine will then become a springboard for future incursions. You know, the way that they justify these invasions is by, you know, the presence of ethnic Russians or Russian speakers. You know, that's an argument that they may try to use, like, in Kazakhstan, in the Baltics, in other regions. And it's very dangerous. It's not only dangerous for the people who live in those states. It's dangerous for the world because Russia is a mafia state. You know, it's a hostile dictatorship that invades other countries in numerous ways. You know, sometimes it invades them quite literally, as it does in Ukraine. Other times you have cyber warfare, which is what we're engaged in them with. Like, this is not a government that you want to be, you know, empowered. And you also need these very strong Western alliances to push it back, you know, to stop this criminal, exploitative, hyper-aggressive state, you know, from hurting other people. Those alliances get severed when things like this happen, when they, you know, go into places like Ukraine. It weakens NATO. It weakens the EU, which, of course, is already being weakened by things like Brexit, you know, and other events. So they're making their move, and they don't want anything good. You know, they are not liberators.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, yesterday I went on about, you know, what would have happened had the whistleblower not blown the whistle, had this not become a story. You know, had Zelensky come out and said, you know, we're going to do this. We're going after Biden's son. We think that Biden was involved in this nefarious plot to make a whole bunch of money. And, oh, by the way, we're going to find that DNC server that's right here along with Hillary's emails. What would have happened had Zelensky been able to do that? The whistleblower not come forward, and that would have happened. And I said, I think Trump would have won re-election. Biden would have gotten crushed, and we'd be worse off, and Putin would be smiling. And I got an email from a conservative going, well, we would never do that. We would never let the Russians take over Ukraine. And I'm going, are you so sure about that?
Yeah, we already did. I mean, and honestly, this is not just a Trump administration mistake. This was an Obama administration mistake to just let the invasion and takeover of Crimea go, and also to just, generally speaking, underestimate Russia as an enemy for the entire duration of the second half of his administration. I mean, you just go back to the debate where he blew off, Mitt Romney's justified concerns. And, everyone should be concerned about this. Republicans should be concerned about this. And one thing that frustrates me is that this problem was there, as I said, in the era. It was there in 2016. And then we saw people in Trump's immediate orbit, in particular Paul Manafort, doing things like trying to change U.S. foreign policy toward Ukraine to benefit the Kremlin. Like, this is not some new thing that the whistleblower brought forward. The only part that's new is that Trump is in office and was targeting, I guess he thought would be the most likely opponent in 2020 with Joe Biden. So you have this whole other layer, but, this is the same crime. This is the same people. Giuliani was also involved early on. Like, the same people doing the same stuff over and over again for the same reasons, and then they just push it a little farther. They're like, well, let's take down Joe Biden too. Like, what the hell, And so it should have been stopped early on, and it worries me that it took this whistleblower story for whatever reason, that's the thing that finally sparked Pelosi and Schiff and others to move forward on impeachment, when they could have done it not just for Trump and Russia and Mueller report stuff, but for all the other crimes, like, kids in cages, abuse of the pardon power, all that stuff. That was already there. Like I said before, he's committed so many crimes. It's like a deck of 52 cards. You can have a crime on each one and be like, pick a crime, any crime. Like, they all work. You can impeach on all of it. And I hope they do. I hope they impeach him like 52 times, because it's enough, and we shouldn't stand for any of it.
No, I'm right there with you. Now, the other day, you had Rand Paul at the Trump rally in Kentucky saying that they have to know who the whistleblower is. The media needs to publish their name. I'm curious your thoughts. I went on about it yesterday. I'm curious your thoughts.
I mean, I've wondered for a long time if he's compromised by Russia. Like, there are some people in the government who I think are. I mean, Dana Rohrabacher was one. He's now gone. Kevin McCarthy is another, obviously, Trump. He's behaved that way for a long time. We're now seeing more and more people put out the whistleblower's name. Everyone, from those who were tweeting the Breitbart article that I guess named it, Donald Trump Jr. did that today. The journalist Yasser Ali, for reasons that just I don't understand, tweeted his actual name in a tweet. Like, this is all very dangerous. I'm worried about this person's safety, just like I worry about the safety of everybody who's testifying, of everyone who comes forward, because people keep getting threatened with physical violence. Like, we've had this with judges. We've had this with the other whistleblowers. We've had this with journalists. Like, it's a serious problem that no one really seems willing to talk about. And so it's a big deal when you do that. And, of course, it's a big deal when Rand Paul, a member of Congress, goes ahead and does it. I mean, that's, I think it's a crime. I can't quite tell anymore, since no one seems to follow laws, but ostensibly I think it would be, and certainly something that would merit removal from office, but we'll see.
And then you have Rand Paul today, who evidently blocked a piece of legislation, a resolution, backing the protection of whistleblowers. And you go, exactly, what's the message here? The message here is, any other whistleblowers out there who know of other crimes this administration has committed, this is your future.
Oh, absolutely. And they've been doing that for a long time. I mean, what they did to Reality Winner, I think, was the start of that, where she got the longest sentence in U.S. history for whistleblowing charged under the Espionage Act. And she was the person who showed that Russia had intervened in the election, quite possibly by changing our votes, like by a more systematic hacking attempt. No one wants to touch that. Like, no one will go near that. I do. But most people don't want to. I think it's the implications of that are we have a completely illegitimate government. Like, all these court appointments, everything that this administration has done is illegitimate. And also, our elections are completely insecure. And that's a massive problem. And why aren't we doing anything about that? Like, it raises problems that people don't want to talk about, although some raised it before the election. Like Harry Reid literally put out a statement saying that our results are likely to be falsified. Like, that was the word he used, by Russia. Like, that's so serious, and nobody would go near it. But anyway, they put her in jail, I think, to make an example of her, to scare off future whistleblowers. There have been other whistleblowers since about things like Russia infiltrating the U.S. Treasury, also a very big deal that no one wants to talk about. That whistleblower was arrested. And, you know, now they're going after, like, the king whistleblower of whistleblowers, like the one that, for some whatever reason, Congress has decided that this one is important and the women who came forward can just, like, rot in jail, apparently. But, you know, they are definitely trying to make an example of this individual. And, you know, it's shameful in every way.
No, I'll tell you, I worry about their safety because you've got some really crazy nitwits on the Trump side of the fence.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it doesn't just have to be like the administration going after him, although I'm sure they would love to. It can just be some wacko, you know, who looks him up, who finds somebody with the same name and, you know, accidentally hurts someone. Like, there's a million ways that this could go awry. I'm guessing this person has some kind of security protection, but I gotta say, I know enough people who've been threatened, you know, very badly, and they'll go to, like, the Democrats or some sort of body that has a lot of money and resources as for help. They'll be like, hey, you know, like, I need a bodyguard or something, like, you know, Russia's trying to kill me, the Trump people are trying to kill me, and they're just like, oh, too bad. Like, there's such a lack of a structural support system for whistleblowers and other concerned people that need, like, immediate private security. Like, it's amazing to me that they just kind of hang people out to potentially get killed, and we've seen some deaths, so I don't know. I don't know what's up with that. I just know it's bad.
No, I know what it is. It's to silence the next one. Because, hey, you know, look at what we do to people we call heroes. Look at what we've done to the people at 9/11. Look at the people we've sent off to war. Look at how we neglect and screw them over. Imagine now what we would do to whistleblowers. Imagine what we'll do to you if you open your trap. You know, like you said, this is how the mafia operates.
Yeah, sorry, you cut out for a second. But yeah, absolutely. Like, no one is really given treatment. Like, people who do the right thing, like I was reading about this with 9/11 cancer deaths, and, you know, and the lack of, you know, support for those, for first respondents, and also for journalists, you know, who went in and covered 9/11 and are now dying of cancer. And so, of course, somebody who actually goes against the party line, goes against, you know, institutionalist sort of duties, which lately, people are far too loyal to, far too kind of blindly loyal. Like, when institutions are corrupted, which they have been by the Trump administration, the obligation to serve them, when what you're being asked to do is illegal, you know, that goes out the window. Like, you have to do what is actually the law of the Constitution, and you have to do what's morally right. Apparently, this has been a challenge for people in our government, because it's taken them a while to kind of come forward. You know, you saw a lot of resignations. You saw a lot of firings, a lot of gutting of places like the State Department or the FBI. But it's only recently that I think we're seeing kind of a band of federal officials, you know, just saying enough, like, I can't do this. Like, I have to, you know, to come forward in whatever capacity I can. And because I think law has become more nebulous under Trump, since no one faces consequences and the only people who are punished are people like whistleblowers, there's a lot of merited fear. But that's what makes it more important to protect them. And I'm, you know, a little worried that they're just not given that kind of protection that they deserve.
No, you're right. And especially if you look at the fact that Trump and the Republicans have packed the courts with crazy ideologues and not even qualified ones. I mean, they've gotten a number of people the Bar Association has ranked completely unqualified. They've put them on life appointments on the federal bench. So not good stuff on many places.
Oh, absolutely. And that's planned. I mean, that's the thing. When everyone thought Trump was stupid, I was like, no. You got to look at everybody surrounding him. And that includes people like Mitch McConnell and all these other GOP bureaucrats whose whole dream in life was to pack the court system and to rig the Supreme Court. And they're not hiding that. Like, McConnell bragged about that during Obama's term. So it's completely expected. But that is the biggest, way into consolidating an autocracy is to rig the judiciary, because that's the biggest bulwark. You know, that's the thing that was, you know, flipping verdicts. They're not strong as that anymore because so many of these courts have been packed with people whose only quality is blind loyalty to the Trump administration, you know, not to the law, not to any kind of principle, but just like, I will follow the party line. I will do whatever you tell me. I will, you know, render whatever verdict you tell me to give. Like, that's what we have now. And we're going to be living with that for decades. And I don't know, you know, if by some miracle we get rid of Trump, maybe that personality cult will kind of dissipate. I think it's more likely the system itself will be, you know, will continue to be structured in this really nefarious way, and that the personality cult will just transfer to whoever the heir is. I mean, if it's Pence, maybe not, because, you know, Pence, but, you know, to somebody else. Either way, you know, we're in trouble.
I'm right there with you. And again, I'm hoping 2020 gives some hope. But if yesterday was any indication, maybe there's a little bit of hope. But, Sarah, I appreciate you taking some time for us, sharing your thoughts. Always great stuff.
Oh, thank you.
Good stuff, as always. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.